Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
Brad Carson in studio producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruption.
Well, Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
It's the last day of February. February 28th. You realize this is the first time I've sat in this studio since February 1st?
Yes.
Literally, the last time I was here was the first day of the month of February.
I remember that day like it was yesterday, Gary.
I've been doing the show.
Yeah.
Just never in this studio. So it's nice to be back.
It's good to see your face, man. I love putting a face with the voice.
Oh, I feel like my face has had better days. I've reached the point of exhaustion where I was like about an hour ago.
Yeah.
Between the airport and here, sitting in a parking lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I could probably catch 30 minutes of sleep right here in this parking lot. So if you saw me sitting in a black car sleeping earlier, you're like, that looks like GP. It was me. I was tired.
We had some clients asking about who was the guy laying down in the parking lot in his car. I'm like,
it was me. Yeah. Tired. Been a long life.
Good to see you.
Been a long day and a long life.
Hey, you're successful, Gary. Could be worse.
Yes, it could be worse. Let me set this afternoon schedule for you. 420, John Martin is going to be here. He's my little buddy.
Yeah.
Co-host Jason and John show. He used to be with Cookie. He upgraded, though. Now he's with Sam. He's going to join me in about 20 minutes. I'll talk Tiger basketball with him. John Martin will be here right around 420. When I finish that segment, I'll do four notable stories, 444, at which point we're going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, Jason Witten is leaving ESPN to rejoin the Dallas Cowboys. So his, and I say this as respectfully as I can.
Yeah, do that.
Uneven career as a broadcaster is over, at least for now. We'll talk about that around 4:44. Patriots owner Robert Kraft has officially pleaded not guilty to soliciting prostitution. I'll tell you why that's not surprising and why he may get off. Excuse the phrase.
I'm sorry.
Didn't mean it like that.
Hello.
A little later on this hour, Johnny Manziel is out of the CFL and possibly headed to the Alliance of American Football, so that'd be good for the league, at least from a publicity perspective. Talk about that just before 5 o'clock. And Bryce Harper has agreed to the richest contract in American sports history. Last week when Manny Machado agreed to the richest contract in American sports history, I said about a few days, Bryce Harper will beat that contract. He did it today. $330 million guaranteed dollars to hit home runs to right field in Philadelphia. We'll talk about that during four notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calk is just like always. Then I will eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with the Memphis Grizzlies because they played another basketball game last night. We talked about it during dinner to go. I described it as the biggest game of the night. And about 30 seconds into that description, I realized it just wasn't. It was a bad Eastern Conference team against a bad Western Conference team. And I won't tell you that the game was good, but the game was close. Bulls win at 109-107. So the Grizzlies dropped to 24-39 overall, 15-17 inside of FedEx Forum. They are now projected to finish with the sixth worst record in the NBA. If you go to the 538 blog, it's got them projected now to finish 31-51. And if that is true, it means you will only see the Grizzlies win seven more times this entire season. Got him projected to finish 31-51. That will be sixth from the bottom. And if they actually do finish sixth from the bottom in this goal to convey the pick to Boston, they will have a less than 4% chance of doing that. If they are projected to finish, if they do finish sixth, the chances of them slipping out of the top eight is less than 4%. Mm. They would have a better chance of getting Zion Williamson than they would of conveying the pick. So this plan, like so many other plans this season, not going well for the Memphis Grizzlies. But the big story from last night was it was close down the stretch. Mike Conley has a collision with Chris Dunn with 17.4 seconds left. J.B. Bickerstaff and Mike Conley both subsequently said they thought a foul should be called. A foul was not called. And for what I believe is the second time this season, but it might be more than that, J.B. Bickerstaff used the bulk, if not the entirety, of his postgame press conference to address the way the gentleman Mike Conley is treated by NBA referees. If you got a second, listen to this.
I come in here, and how many times I repeat myself and say the same things over and over again about how Mike Conley gets treated. It's disrespectful, to be honest with you. You know, and somebody at some point in time, you know, has to address it. I mean, we've done all the things that the league asks us to do. You know, we have phone calls, we send emails, we do our referee rating reports, you know, after every single game. You know, and it's the common theme. You know, they said that they were going to clean that up. You know, they said that was a point of emphasis. You know, freedom of movement, and especially in end-of-game situations where, you know, back in the day you could get away with that type of stuff. But, you know, clear as day, center of the floor, you know, Mike Conley gets tackled, and they allow the play to go on. The foul happens before the ball is inbounded. You get free throws and the ball back. It's a completely different game. So I don't know, you know, It's frustrating that, you know, this entire season we've had the same conversation about Mike Conley, and nothing has changed. You know, I don't know how far we have to go, to get any results. You know, trying to be respectful of the process. We've done that all year, and that's led to absolutely nothing. It's led to no change. I, you know, can't talk about how classy Mike Conley is. As a human being and a basketball player, he's the type of person you want to promote. He's not the type of person that you want to continually disrespect. He treats the referees with the utmost respect every single night. And every single night he gets treated the same way. I mean, it's maddening. And no one gives us an explanation. You know, we've had conversations. We've sat and watched film with the officials. And they've told us what they see, and yet nothing has changed. It continues to be the same, night in, night out. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they want from us. Again, we've been as respectful of the process as we possibly can. You know, I've drawn technical fouls over the season trying to get, you know, Mike those calls. You know, whatever it's been needed, we've tried to do. But it's disrespectful. It really, really is. It's for a guy who could, you know, mean so much to this. He's the type of guy you want to promote in the NBA. And for him to repeatedly be treated like that is disrespectful. And yet nobody does anything about it. No changes happen.
With Mike, can you just speak to, I guess, his character, the fact that he's never gotten teed up in his playing career?
Yeah, I mean, you think about that. As many games as he's played, as many moments as he's been in, as many times as he's been knocked to the ground, you know, a guy who continues to be classy and carry himself the right way and continues to be disrespected. It's insulting that I have to sit up here and have this conversation at this point in the season, at this point in his career. You know, it has absolutely nothing to do with, you know, this year. You know, nothing has changed. You know, Mike has been, you know, one of the toughest players that this league has. You know, he never settles. He continues to go into the paint. You know, he does what's right for his team. He does what's right by his teammates and organizations. You know, the guy played with a broken face because it was the right thing to do. You know, and didn't change his game. At some point in time, somebody should show him the respect, the common courtesy to allow him to be treated the way that, you know, the rest of the league is treated. We're not asking for more. That's the thing about it. We're not asking him to be treated differently. We just want him to get his due. Thank you, guys.
It's interesting, JB said, while talking about Mike, about how he's a class act both as a person and a player. And evidence that he is as a player is the fact that he has played 12 seasons in the NBA and never received a technical foul. Think about that. That's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Russell Westbrook has 14 technical fouls this season.
Yeah.
14 this season.
Yeah.
They played 52 games. He has 14 technical fouls. He gets one every 3.7 games. Russell Westbrook. So does Andre Drummond's got 14. Draymond Green's got 14. Patrick Beverley's got 13. Kent Bazemore has 12. Kevin Durant has 11. Mike Conley has 0 in this season and every other season he's ever played. So that's evidence that he's a class act on the floor. I've often said about Mike when asked about him, I'm not going to pretend we're best friends. We're not. But we've done charity stuff together. I've said this about Mike. I'd like for him to be the point guard of our NBA franchise, provided we can't get James Harden or Steph Curry, right? I've never tried to overstate it.
Yeah.
I like Mike Conley here. I like that he is still here post the trade deadline. I also would like Mike Conley to be my neighbor.
Yes.
I mean, it would, A, mean I live in an amazing neighborhood.
Great place,
but, B,
yeah.
What I mean is that, like, even if he didn't play basketball, he's just easy to get along with, by all accounts, good dude. Class act on the court, class act off the court. And so the question becomes, how do you resolve this issue? Because it is a real issue. Like, however you feel about that call that was not made last night, that really could have turned a loss into a win, because you get the free throw and the ball back, you've at least got a chance to tie with no shot clock on.
Yep.
I don't know that they would have tied it or won it, but it would have given them an opportunity that they otherwise didn't have. And it could have helped them in this quest to convey a pick that seems less likely than likely at this point. Regardless of how you feel about that call, it is undeniable that he doesn't get the same kind of calls that other people get because he's not a verbal threat to the officials the way Russell Westbrook would be, Draymond Green is, Kevin Durant is, any of these guys that have double-digit technical fouls this season.
Yep.
Because NBA referees are just like anybody else. They're human. And so forget about it from a basketball perspective for a second. Think about it in your own life. How you conduct yourself with people when you already know in advance how they'll handle a situation. In other words, I don't know what, if you're driving around right now, what your job is, but I'm certain the overwhelming majority of you have a boss.
Yeah.
And you have to get up and be somewhere every morning or afternoon or night or whenever. If you have a boss that if you're 1 minute late is going to write you up, yell at you, be in your face, ask you a bunch of questions, that will make you not be 1 minute late.
Right.
If you have a boss that's like pretty laid back, and if you're 4 minutes late, it's not a big deal. If you're 45 minutes late, it obviously is. But if you're 7 minutes late, it's not a big deal. Well, then you won't hesitate to be 7 minutes late. You know, when I'm in New York working for CBS Sports Network, we have call times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, 5 p.m. is the call time. That means that's what time you're supposed to be in the building. 6 p.m. is the call time. 3 p.m. is the call time. But it's also very loose. Like if you're there at the call time's 5 and you're there at 5:15, nobody's gonna say a word to you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's 5:50, you might get a text message like, hey, just want to make sure everything's okay. Are you on your way? We got a production meeting in 5 minutes. Want to make sure you're here.
Right.
Are you in makeup? Where are you? And everybody sort of understands that. And it doesn't mean you want to get there at 5:15. It just means that, you know, if you do get there at 5:15, it's not going to, nobody blinks.
Mm-hmm.
But 5:45, people do start to notice. And so you plan accordingly. I try to get there at 5 o'clock, but if it's 5:15, I'm not freaking out. Right. Fine. What if I knew if it was 5:15, people would freak out? I'd never be there at 5:15 again. I'd be there at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Referees are the same way. If you call a foul on somebody and you know, well, this is the guy that's going to get in my face. This is the guy who's going to yell at me. This is the guy that's going to put me in an awkward situation where then I either have to give him a tech or not. And then I got to explain that to somebody. Then maybe I got his coach. And then consciously or subconsciously, that's you're aware of that. I noticed this about myself once upon a time as it relates to social media. I'll be sitting around on Saturday during college football season, and I'll make a Mike Gundy joke or a Nick Saban joke or, you know, an Urban Meyer joke. And yet I know, and you don't have to call me on it because I'm acknowledging this. I wouldn't make the same John Calipari joke or Mike Krzyzewski joke or Ben Howland joke.
Yeah.
And so you go, okay, why? Why am I more comfortable goofing on these guys and I wouldn't goof on these guys? You want to know why?
Why?
Nobody's going to call me if I goof on Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Saban, I'm confident, doesn't know who I am. The people around Nick Saban might not know who I am. There's no repercussions to me making a Nick Saban joke. I'm never going to hear it about again. Maybe from Alabama fans, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to take a phone call for a Nick Saban joke. I don't have to. Nobody's asking me, yo, man, why'd you do that on a Nick Saban joke? He's not a real person to me. He's just an amazing football coach. I'm removed from it. I never have to hear about it. If I make a Mike Krzyzewski cheap shot on Twitter, Mike won't call, but either his SID or his or John Shire.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to call.
Yeah, somebody on staff.
Then I got to answer the phone.
Right.
And I got to go. Yeah, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. Or I got to defend it. Yeah. But either way, I got to deal with it. Yeah. I mean, as this thing with the FBI trials unfolded,
oh boy.
I've had to talk about some people I know well in ways that is uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Sean Miller, Will Wade, some of the guys who are caught up in this. Well, when I talk about those things, yes, I might get a call from Will or Sean, but I can say honestly, hey, what do you want me to do?
Right?
You know, it's a wiretap. You're on it. It doesn't sound good. Now you're being subpoenaed. You know,
this is there.
I didn't tweet you need to be fired, but yes. I also can't play dumb for you.
Right.
I can deal with that. But the point is, I would have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also can't avoid it, so I do deal with it. I'm talking about just random off, just like, boom, just a random tweet, joke.
Mm-hmm.
I can get a bunch of retweets and likes if I do it, but it's unnecessary to my job. Nobody's sitting around on a Saturday waiting to know what I think about Urban Meyer's football team or Nick Saban's football team. So I don't have to tweet about any of it. But if I do, I know there's no repercussions whatsoever. It doesn't matter. Only good can come of it. I can get some laughs and some retweets and some likes and whatever. If I do that same thing with a basketball coach, odds are I know the guy I'm doing it about. He's got my cell number, or the people around him do. I'll have to deal with that. So I avoid that. And it's not even that intentional. I just, somewhere subconsciously, I just know this ain't the place to make the jokes. Make the jokes over here. I don't need to make the jokes over here. Because over here is real life. Over here, if I do this, somebody's going to call me and ask me why I did that. I'd rather just not deal with it. Same thing with NBA officials. You know that if you call a could-go-either-way foul on Russell Westbrook, you're going to have to hear about it. It's a former MVP in your face who doesn't care even a little about getting a technical foul. He gets one every four games. Doesn't matter to him. You might be a little hesitant to blow the whistle. At least blow the whistle against him. But Mike Conley, you can blow the whistle. He's not going to say anything to you. You cannot blow the whistle when you should. He's not going to say anything to you. He's never gotten a technical foul. And it doesn't mean that Mike should change his character, should have manufactured outburst. But it does mean that JB is onto something when he says, what do we have to do to get him not to be treated differently, but just to be treated like everybody else. There is no scenario where
Russell Westbrook or Kevin Durant could get knocked down the way Mike Conley got knocked down, and the whistle would not blow. Because the officials know Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook would not let the official get away with it. They also know Mike Conley will. Because he's not wired in a way to get in your face. To go in the locker room afterward, name you, cuss you, and accept the $50,000, $75,000 fine that goes along with it. It's a real thing. And I can understand the frustration if you're JB, and especially if you're Mike. If you're Mike, I'm out here treating you as an official, as a fellow human, with respect. I know you're doing the best you can, and so I'm not going to get in your face after every missed call or bad call, because that's just not the way I'm wired. That is what should be ideal for the NBA, and yet because of the way this league works, it works against Mike Conley. And so what you hope is JB's rant gets enough attention where maybe this gets back to official A, official B, official C, perhaps the NBA at an even higher level, because it is a real problem. If you're the NBA, you don't want your stars yelling at officials and talking bad about officials after every game. That's why the fine structure is where it is. But if they don't do that, they don't get the whistle they deserve. That's a problem. And unfortunately, I don't think it's a problem that gets fixed. It's just a problem that gets ranted about every so often.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
John Martin joins me now.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hey there, little buddy. How you doing?
What's up, GP? Welcome back to the 901.
Nice to be in the 901. I haven't been here much lately. I've been in this studio. Last time it was February 1st. Today it's February 28th. I basically went the entire month of February without actually working from the what's our address here, by the way?
1835 Mariah Woods Boulevard, yeah. Suite 1.
1835 Mariah Woods Boulevard. It's been a long time since I've been to Mariah Woods Boulevard. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, man. It's good to have you back. Your presence has been missed.
It's nice to be here. Okay, so Trendon Wofford's playing basketball down there in Alabama, and I saw Avery Johnson, John Pelfrey were there. The Duke staff's there. LSU coach Will Wade's there. Penny and Mike's there. Why haven't you got this recruitment wrapped up yet? I figured you'd have this done by the end of February.
I've been trying, man. I've been trying hard, but I can't get it done. And I'm sure Memphis feels the same way, for sure. I think, obviously, you know, Trendon is probably their primary target at this point. You know, Mike has known him since the kid was 5 years old. You know, Christian Wofford played for Ernie Kuiper back when it was M33M. So I know they wish it was wrapped up, too. Duke is coming in there late, and because they're Duke, like, people will think, oh, my God, like, this is what they did with Boogie Ellis. They're going to have a shot. And the answer is no, they're not. They're not really going to be a threat in this recruitment. And they can do things like this because they are Duke. So, they can have conversations, whereas other schools cannot, and they can be entertained, whereas other schools cannot. But, you know, this is a very close, like, a very familiar kind of recruitment because, you know, like I said, Mike's known Trendon since he was 5. LSU has a guy there on staff who I believe is a family member, if I'm not mistaken, of the Wofford. So, you know, this is a family thing, and so it's going to come down to either LSU or Memphis.
Okay, hold tight real quick. Let me tweet this. Duke has no shot and is no threat, according to at John Martin.
Oh, no.
Nine.
I mean, you can just say, if you want to tweet it out, I don't think like Duke is going to actually like get far with this kid. You could do that. I mean, I don't believe that.
I just wanted to be Duke is no threat.
I mean, I wouldn't say that against, like, I wouldn't say that about, like, I wouldn't have said that about Boogie Ellis. You know what I mean?
No, no, no. I'm kidding with you. You're exactly right. This is gonna the schools that have been there, in there the longest and that have the real relationships connected to not only Trendon but the family. It's gonna be hard to pull him away from one of those. I actually agree with you. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no. I mean, obviously, Duke is a monster. I mean, you know, I don't want to. I mean, who wouldn't want to go to Duke at this point? But yeah, I think Duke is they're up against it in this particular case. Again, against anybody else, yes, I think they have a shot. I just think they're up against too much here.
Well, it's a little bit like when Austin Nichols decided to transfer from the University of Memphis. Like that happened in July. I remember talking to the people I was talking to about it. Like that story broke. I think I was at the airport getting ready to go to Peach Jam. I just remember being at Peach Jam, and I won't get too specific, but the Duke staff had recruited him out of high school, and they were trying to get involved. Like, you know, I sat at Peach Jam and had conversations with Mike Krzyzewski about Austin Nichols. And it became very clear very quickly that they couldn't get involved because it was done to Virginia. And I think Mike even called Mark Nichols, Mike Krzyzewski, and like couldn't get a call back. This all happens within a span of 48 hours. And I finally end up in a subsequent conversation with the Duke staff. And they're like, nah, we're out. And I'm like, well, what happened? And they're like, we can't get a call back. Like when Coach K calls somebody and he can't get a call back, like Coach K could call LeBron and get a call back right now. Like if he can't get a call back from the family, it's old. Like that thing's already wired a certain way. We ain't getting involved there. And I don't want to say this is that with Trendon Wofford, but it's closer to that than not.
Yeah, I mean, when Austin transferred, he knew where he was going.
Right.
And that's why Josh fought it. You know, Josh fought it for a long time. He's like, you can't go to anybody we're playing. And it ended up being like one of four schools. It was like Iowa, Providence, Virginia, and like some other random school, right? And it's like, okay, Virginia kind of sticks out here because everybody knew the deal. Everybody knew that's where it wasn't even like a, you know, it wasn't even a thing. You know, a lot of kids transferred. And it's like a feeding frenzy. But with Austin, it was like it was never even a recruitment. I don't think he even thought about visiting anywhere else.
Talking to John Martin here. He's on Twitter at JohnMartin929, at JohnMartin929. So what is the timetable on the Trendon Wofford recruitment? Is there one? Is this, like you hear sometimes, this prospect should announce in the next week, is expected to announce after his high school season. Is there any such timeline with Trendon Wofford?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to have it wrapped up for you, Gary, here in the next couple weeks.
I'd appreciate that. Like, get it done before Selection Sunday, if you could.
Yeah, well, you know, honestly, we're going to need some content in April. So, you know, if we could, like, just get a week out of it in April for the radio station, that'd be better, don't you think? I mean, really and truly.
Okay, now that
we're going to have enough in March, let's be honest.
Okay, now that I'm thinking this through, here's what we need. Let's just get through the season. Penny can keep us occupied till at least the end of the American Athletic Conference tournament. And then, you know, we'll have the NCAA tournament, and, you know, Tennessee is going to be in there.
That's right.
Ole Miss is going to
be in there.
Who?
In there.
Memphis might be in there. They might. They could. It's not crazy. So Memphis could be in there, but Tennessee will be in there. Ole Miss will be in there. Mississippi State will be in there. So we got plenty to do in March. And the Final Four is later than normal this year. So we got like the first week of April covered.
Yep.
So then maybe, I would plan on trying to get him to commit. It's like second week of April, maybe third week of April.
Yeah.
And that'll get us
just to kind of dominate the news cycle in Memphis.
Right. And then like we could take May off and like just, you know, go see Cardi B or whatever. And then
we could definitely take the whole month of May off.
We'll take May off, we'll go see Cardi B and, you know, do Barbecue Fest and all that stuff. And then
unless Jalen Green wants to reclassify.
Well, I'm still gonna take off. I don't care about that so much.
Okay, that's fine. But I'll do the shows if Jalen Green reclassifies.
Yeah, I'll let you handle that. And then June's here, so we got the NBA draft coming up. And considering doesn't appear that the Grizzlies are gonna convey the pick, that'll keep us occupied.
Draft pick. Yeah, okay.
So then we got that, and then July. You know, we got, you know, Penny at Peach Jam. Penny on the road recruiting. That's light work, easy stuff. And then August, we'll take August off. Maybe see if Cardi B what she's up to. We'll go see Cardi B again. And then and then it's football season. Yeah, then we're good.
And then after that, it's James Wiseman time.
And then after that, it's James Wiseman time. I've got the whole year figured out already.
Yeah, sculpted out.
We already.
What a year.
There's a lot of Cardi B time in there, in fairness.
Yeah, well, I think we need Cardi B time at this point.
I mean, like, you got 2 months of Cardi B in there.
Yeah, we'll do Cardi B in
that'll probably be the best thing going.
We'll do Cardi B in May and August.
Okay.
All right. Of course.
There you go.
I'm looking forward to Cardi B.
I think everybody in Memphis is looking forward to Cardi B.
Why wouldn't you look forward to Cardi B?
She's something to look forward to.
If I can give you a sincere answer on trending, though, Gary.
Yeah, I guess. Go ahead.
Whenever his season wraps up, I'm not sure exactly when that is. I know it's going to be soon, but I think whenever that season is over, I think that's when you'll see a decision.
Maybe Trendon Wofford will come for Cardi B.
Maybe we could take Trendon Wofford till he could commit, and then we'll take him to the music fest with us.
He should commit at the Cardi B concert.
At the show,
right? And then let Offset handle the introductions.
Yeah, that'd be actually pretty good.
Like, she goes off, you know, she does her set, then she goes off stage, you know, and that, like, you know, before she comes back to do encore. And in that moment, Offset handles the Trendon Wofford commitment to the University of Memphis. Crowd goes wild.
Oh, yeah.
And then Cardi B comes out and closes the show.
Yeah, that sounds like a dream. I know you'd hate it, but you'd be writing a column about that one.
Do I have to come up with all the good ideas, or can somebody else handle one every once in a while?
I mean,
you're on fire today.
Talking to John Martin here, 92.9 FM ESPN. What kind of chance do you give the Tigers on Saturday at Cincinnati? With the way they're playing and the way Jeremiah's playing, they're going to be about a 10-point underdog. I'm not going to predict them to win, but I don't think it's outlandish to think that, you know, Cincinnati struggled just last night in a road game. I don't think it's crazy to think maybe they could go up there and do something, at least make it interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were ahead for the majority of the game here in Memphis, you know, and then, like we talked about, Cincinnati ended up imposing their will. But Memphis is in a better place mentally, I think, since that game. And honestly, like, you cover college basketball nationally, Gary, so you see this time and time again. But, like, the components of a Magic March run, they're there for Memphis. You've got seniors. You've got a coach that the team has clearly bought into and believes in. And you've got a supernova guard who is averaging 30 points this month. Like, those are the ingredients that can come together to produce, you know, like a magical run. And I'm not saying they're going to win this weekend, but, you know, listen, Jeremiah Martin is going to give them a chance. And Cincinnati is out. Once you get outside of Cumberland, like, they don't have much. You know, they don't have much. So if you can manage to limit him, and Jeremiah can do what he's been doing. Now, that's going to be tough on the road to Cincinnati. They're one of the best defensive teams in the country. But, you know, if they can manage to find a way to do that, then it'll definitely be a game. And I like you said, I wouldn't predict a win, but they're playing their best basketball right now. And they've got a guy in Jeremiah who is just on fire every time out now. So they're going to have a chance. And if they do win, it's going to be really interesting in Memphis next week, or the week after, I guess.
Well, I think it gets interesting starting next week, because if they do win, then you can start having real conversations about a top four seed in the tournament. And though I think they're still far enough off the bubble where you can't really have smart conversations about that yet, and maybe you can't even really have them. Like, you know, we might bring Jerry Palm on Monday, and he'd say, they're just still not there. But it won't be outlandish that we could be spending the first week of March talking about Memphis, you know, being at that point. If they win at Cincinnati, they're going to be in the top 70 at KenPom, probably top 50 of the net. They'd be on a four-game winning streak. They'd be 11-6 in the league, and at least on Joe Lunardi and Jerry Palm's radar, even if, like, they're at the extreme end of the radar. And that'd all be that'd be fun stuff, because I'll be honest, there was a point in the season, particularly when, you know, they were losing to Tulsa, South Florida, Cincinnati, back-to-back-to-back, dropping to 5-5 in the league. I didn't think we'd be having these conversations, but here we are.
Oh, no. I mean, I even made this point earlier. Like, it's just, in and of itself, it's fun to even, you know, begin to talk about, okay, what does Memphis need to do? Like, what are the scenarios for Memphis to get a top four seed? Who needs to lose? Who needs to win? It's actually possible, Gary, for them to get a top four seed without winning this Saturday. It's actually possible.
It is possible. It's also unlikely.
Unlikely, for sure. But, like, my point is, it's not the end of the world if you lose this weekend at all. Like, I mean, you'd love to win it. You want to win it, because that will make the world a lot easier. But Like, if UCF goes winless, which, look at their schedule, it's possible. And if Wichita State goes undefeated, which, look at their schedule, it's possible. And if USF just loses one more, as long as Memphis takes care of business against Tulsa, they'll be the number four seed. I know that sounds like a lot, but just break down, I'm just telling you, break down the schedules, and you'll be like, huh, you know what? That kind of sounds like it might happen.
Well, UCF's schedule is at Houston tomorrow, and that's, Saturday. That's probably an L. I mean, it's game day at Houston. I mean, that's amazing.
Houston can't lose, because if Houston loses, it'll kill their seeding.
I don't know that it will kill their seeding. It's just one data point. But you don't want to lose when you are presented with a stage unlike you've maybe ever had since Clyde Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon were there. I mean, when it was announced, I guess early in the week, that game day was going to Houston instead of going to Knoxville for Tennessee, Kentucky, like, I texted Kelvin Sampson. I was just like, man, yo, congrats. Like, that's a big accomplishment. I know you don't get a win, but that's a big program thing. To be able to take over an American Athletic Conference program that, yeah, does have great history, but has been bad for a while, and to turn it into such a thing where Reese Davis and Seth Greenberg and Jay Williams and Jay Billis are going to be on your campus, like, that's an amazing thing. So you don't want to lose it. Just from that perspective, it's the biggest day on that campus from a basketball perspective in a long time. You don't want to mess it up with a loss to UCF. But either way, Houston probably wins that game. That's our point. And then the next two are at home against Cincinnati. That's UCF. No guarantee you're going to win that one. I mean, it's like a coin flip situation. And then
Cincinnati needs to win too, you know?
Right. And then at Temple. You know, at Temple, you might be a favorite, but it won't be more than a point or two.
Well, Temple's fighting for their tournament lives.
Right.
You know?
So I guess I'd put it this way. KenPom gives them a 23% chance, UCF, to win at Houston, only a 58% to beat Cincinnati at home, and only a 52% chance to beat Temple at home. That, by definition, underlines the point you made, which is it's not crazy to think they could lose the rest of their games.
Yeah, and Wichita State, I bet if you went through, they play the bottom dwellers of the conference. They got SMU, East Carolina, Tulane, and UConn at home tonight. So, like, 4-0, they're playing better. Wichita State's playing much better, you know, so that's easily plausible. And South Florida's lost 4 in a row in conference. So they can definitely, you know, they can lose one, whether it's at UConn or SMU at home. You just never know. So, it's still, I mean, listen, win this weekend, and then you don't have to worry about this crap. But odds are you're probably not going to win this weekend, and you can still see a scenario. There's still a way through, however unlikely it may be, to get a top four seed. And if you get a top four seed, you know, I don't know if I'd pick you to win the tournament, but I think you're definitely going to be in the title game. I would say that.
You certainly have a chance to be in the title game. I believe at this point the only teams that would be favored over Memphis in FedEx Forum are Houston and Cincinnati.
And again, Cincinnati, okay, like Cincinnati you were up on, and we'll see what happens on Saturday, but Cincinnati you had a chance to and maybe should have beat here in Memphis. And then Houston, looking back on that, my goodness, like we should probably change the way we view that game. Memphis was competitive in the second half, and that ended up being, that's a top 10 Houston team, so you're going to feel like you have a shot, however unrealistic it may be. So, you know, as we see, Memphis is a different team at home. It's exciting, man, just to think about all the different possibilities with this group. They're an NIT team, and I know that doesn't mean much, but, hell, it's been 5 years, you know?
No, people, like, you don't get excited about an NIT team when you start the season in the top 25 with DeJuan Wagner and Chris Massey and Kelly Wise. I think you can reasonably get excited about the NIT when you start the season ranked 107th at KenPom and when you haven't played in the postseason in years. It's totally, you know, expectations set how you should feel about the way a season unfolds. If they go to the NIT next season with James Wiseman and DJ Jeffries and Trendon Wofford, we'll be having completely different conversations about that. But going to the NIT with this team, that would be an accomplishment, undeniably.
And it's a great thing for the future because, you know, Tyler Harris, Alex Lomax, Antoine Jones, you know, they get more games. They get more games that do matter. These are postseason experiences. More games for Penny in his first year, right? And, I mean, it's not like it's not poetry, but it is a better than he's ever had before kind of send-off for Jeremiah Martin to actually play in a postseason again. Like, not glamorous, but he might get a home game. He'll probably get a home game out of it, an extra home game, chance to salute him, send him off in the postseason. So, It was like I think most people would have taken an NIT to start the year, and they're getting better throughout the course of the year. That's what you want to see. Tubby's first season, they lost 7 of 9 to end the season, and got blown out by 40 and 30 in their final two games. This team's doing the opposite of that in Penny's first year. You can absolutely see the growth psychologically, mentally, however limited they may be talent wise. And what a run for Jeremiah Martin. So this has been a fun year, I can't lie. It kind of got – I was worried there, you know, 2-3 weeks ago where it was going, but Penny seems to have righted the ship, and I'm excited about where it's going.
That is John Martin. He's on Twitter at JohnMartin929. He will be back in studio tomorrow at 11 a.m. Tell Cookie I said what's up. Give Sam like a kiss on the cheek for me.
Did Kelvin Sampson text you back and say, lose my number? You never gave us his response.
He said, I'll tell you exactly what he
said. He's looking right at his phone, actually, right now for you.
I'll tell you exactly what he said.
Did he say, lose my number? I only talked to Goodman.
This is exactly what Kelvin said.
Here we go. He's reading.
He said, thank you so much, Gary. Proud of our program. Amazing how far we've come, brick by brick.
Brick by brick.
They told you brick by brick.
He said it's amazing how far they've come brick by brick.
Did you text him back and say, I regret this immediately? Mm-hmm. Like, that's brick by brick, dude. Oh, my God.
Hey, he stole Butch Jones' line.
I sent him the fist pump emoji.
Did you do the black fist like Brad?
I don't think I can do the black fist. I think that's inappropriate.
You have to hold the button and then slide it over to the African American.
I think it's inappropriate for me to use black fist. That's like using black face.
No, it's not. Don't accuse me of that.
You cannot. You use the black fist, Brad?
Is that the equivalent of blackface?
Yes, you can't do that.
Brad will send a black fist to Jason.
What?
I send it to everybody, not just Jason, to every human.
You cannot send a black fist?
Oh, I have no idea. This is a cultural thing. Is this a faux pas?
You have a white fist.
Am I faux pawing?
When you fist bump somebody...
You have to send with the color of your own skin? You can't represent multicolorism?
That's like being in blackface. You're in blackfist on your phone.
All right, I didn't know.
Your iPhone's in blackfist.
Look, you just educated me. I didn't
know. I don't
know
if I would go that far. But
look, I just got educated. You
might need to be reprimanded.
Don't give me this. There will be somebody in a Wolf Chase parking lot with dumb video that
you
they
might need
they
to be reprimanded.
Attribute. Don't go too far, Gary.
You might need to be reprimanded.
This has gotten the station and our marketing department in trouble.
Brad out there sending blackfist to
everybody. Damn it, Gary.
You can't do that. You have to send.
John.
You have to send a white fist, because that's your fist.
Hey, now I know.
This is all for the good.
All right.
I'm glad you learned this before you got in any real trouble.
All right.
Out there throwing around black fist.
Okay.
Totally inappropriate.
Thank you, John.
John, I'll see you later.
All right.
You can't do that, Brad.
All right.
Because you
don't have to talk about it anymore. I already got the lesson.
When you send somebody the fist bump emoji, it is your fist because you're fist bumping them.
I'll have to get the really, really pasty white one like Casper the Ghost.
You need the whitest fist available on your iPhone.
I make chalk jealous, bro. I need that white one.
The whitest fist you can get. You've really been out. Are you sending out light skin black fist or dark skin black fist?
I go random. I like it. My phone, I just slide around and pick one. You know, yellow, black, light skin, white, and I represent all.
There is no yellow fist.
There is a yellow fist on there. That's the one it comes with. That's the automated one is the auto fist, is the yellow one.
I have a white fist.
There's a white one on the slider, I think. I haven't studied the damn fist pump.
And you've been out there sending, like, Dikembe Mutombo's fist to people.
Listen, I'm just trying to represent.
No, what are you talking about?
I'm just trying to mix it up a little bit.
That's how you end up in blackface.
All right, we got the message here, Gary.
You need to call. You need to go ahead and put it on. Fix your phone right now. You can't be sending a black fist to people. That's insensitive.
I just programmed it.
And insensitive and inappropriate.
Okay, fair enough.
Jason Witness going back to the Cowboys. We'll talk about that next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com. Feels so
good it should come. Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show. Live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN. Feel like a boss. She said I'm in the wrong hole. I said I'm lost. She said I'm going too fast. I'm exhausted.
Jeff Calkins is your award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian, host of the Jeff Calkins Show. He's going to be with me a little after 5 o'clock. We will talk to him then. But right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Jason Witten is returning to the Dallas Cowboys, signed a one-year, $3.5 million contract that can max out reportedly at $5 million. That means he's leaving the booth, Monday Night Football, that ESPN provided him with. It's an interesting story on a couple of different levels. A, it's a future Hall of Fame tight end returning to the NFL, but also because he was in a high-profile broadcasting position without ever having worked in the media before, just sort of thrown right out there, the same way Tony Romo was thrown right into it. And I think probably because Tony Romo was thrown right into it. And I say this as respectfully as I can say it, it didn't go so well. I'll be honest, I didn't listen to the broadcast enough of Monday Night Football to have real opinions about what made Jason Witten good or bad in that role. But
I think it was chops.
But I read enough about it to know that the reviews weren't
not
great.
Good.
And he even joked about it at certain times.
Right.
Like, you know, I know I'd like to have some moments back and, you know, I'm going to keep working.
Yeah.
But that's tough when you're thrown into a big high-profile job and maybe you're not equipped for that job. Like if Jason Witten were working on, you know, ESPNU football games, you know, Mac games on Thursday nights, it wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But when you're on Monday Night Football, it's such a massive stage. And if you don't meet the standard, people who have opinions about such things will notice. And maybe even people who don't have opinions about such things, they can notice.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the truth. Romo made it look so easy because he's like naturally great.
He's gifted at this.
I don't mean good. I mean,
he is excellent.
Great. Excellent.
Superior. There's no question.
Excellent.
Yes.
He made it look so easy that people think that, well, that can't be that difficult. But, you know, being on television is not easy. And I think what happens is that the people who are really good at it make it look easy so that then everybody else assumes that it is easy. Oh, like, oh, I could do that.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting on that set and you got a producer in your ear and you got eight cameras pointed at you, and it's not the easiest thing in the world.
Which is harder, radio or TV?
Television. Mm-hmm. Radio is a little more free-flowing. I could stop or misspeak or ramble. God knows I can ramble.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And it's not out of...
Yeah, it's long-form-ish.
It nobody blinks.
Right.
But if you stumble on television because it's such a visual thing...
Right.
It's noticeable.
Yep.
Television is much more difficult. Hosting on television is much more difficult than it looks. And I learned that when I started doing some hosting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so my point being, I can be a little bit of a victim of this as well because I, you know, sit on the set with these hosts and I go, well, that can't be that difficult. I could probably do that. And then you get in that chair. It's a different job.
Yes.
It's not easy. I hosted a few things and I'll be honest, I didn't like the way
you
I performed.
You didn't enjoy it.
I just didn't feel like I was great at it. Now, maybe if I had 50 reps, I would be, but I didn't like...
That's a different role, though.
It's very different.
It's much different than what you do on...
Here's what I think is true. Whether you're talking about Adam Zucker, Brent Stover, Jamie Erdahl, any of the hosts that I work with on a regular basis, here's what I think's true, and I've talked to them about this.
Mm-hmm.
You won't notice a good host... Because you just think they're directing traffic and getting you in and out of breaks.
Yeah.
You won't notice it.
Right.
You'll notice that they're bad.
Right.
And the evidence that they're good at their jobs is that you don't really notice them.
Yeah.
That's how good they are at their jobs. Yeah. You won't notice a great studio host.
Right.
Ernie Johnson maybe being the exception because he's really great because he's handling a different type of show with different types of personalities.
Characters. Right.
And he's constantly like letting them go, but then bringing them back, and then letting them go,
and then bringing them back. Mm-hmm. That he's very good, and sure. I think that's obvious to even people who don't understand television. But you know, your typical studio host, you won't notice them, and that's proof that they're good. Because if they weren't good, you would notice. You'll a bad host stands out. A good one just sort of blends in. And you know, to circle this back to Jason Witten, I think because Romo was so good, they said, well, we'll take another guy who's friends with that guy, who is famous, looks the part,
yep,
has a big personality, and then he'll just be able to do it too. But that Romo is so good that I think two things happen. One, Jason got judged on a Romo scale. Dan Wolkin pointed this out earlier today on Twitter, so that's not good. And then B, he got put into a position that maybe he shouldn't have been in because Romo was so good, and it made other people think, well, if he could do it, then this guy can do it too. So either way, he's not going to be doing it this year. He's going to be playing football again. And I really do think, and I have no knowledge of this whatsoever, although like Jason's agent is Jimmy Sexton.
Oh.
And I believe the person who handled Jason's ESPN contract is my agent. CAA. He's CAA, definitely with CAA.
Okay.
So, I mean, I could know about this. I just haven't asked the question.
Yeah.
But what I think is neatest about this is that it allows Jason to parachute out of this job without...
You didn't get let go, so to speak. I kind of thought that.
And I don't mean that they were going to let him go.
I'm following you.
But
here.
I just mean that at some point...
I thought it when I read the story.
At some point, unless he got significantly better, they would either make a move or he would decide, this ain't for me.
Bingo.
And now you don't have to make that decision.
No, it's
just like, I didn't leave ESPN because I wasn't good at the job or because they didn't want me.
Yeah.
I just went back to play football.
Bingo.
And I think that's just cleaner for everybody.
That's what she said.
I think that's just cleaner for everybody involved. So, good for Jason Witten. We once partied in Clemson, South Carolina all night long and ended up at a Waffle House at like 4 in the morning. Do you know that story?
Yeah, you told it once on the air.
I think I've told that story.
Yeah.
We have a mutual friend, a guy named Mike Morrell, who was an assistant at Clemson.
Yeah.
And now he's the head coach at UNC Asheville. But this was a million years ago. And Mike was an assistant at Clemson. Shaka Smart at the time was also an assistant at Clemson, and I was there. And Mike and Jason Witten went to high school together. They're like seriously close friends. Like, if Mike ever gets married, his best man might be Jason Witten. They're that close. So it was like a Duke-Clemson game in the afternoon. And Mike's like, okay, like, when you get through writing your column, me, Shaka, and I got a couple friends in town, we're all going to go out, so, like, just come meet us. I said, cool. So I go meet them. And I sit down, and I know everybody except for Mike's friends. And I don't know them, but I get introduced. Hey, Richie, this is Gary. Hey, Jason, this is Gary. Hey, Jason, how you doing? Whatever. So at some point, like, our waitress is being kind of slow. So I say, hey, I'm going to run to the bar. Anybody need anything? And this big guy named Jason goes, hey, I'll just roll with you. I said, cool, come on. So me and Jason go to the bar. And we get the drinks for everybody. And we come back, sit at the table. And at some point, Jason gets up to maybe go back to the bar or the bathroom or whatever. But he's no longer present at the table. And this other guy who worked at Clemson, who I knew, he was like, man, how cool is Jason Witten? I'm like, yeah, Jason Witten's cool, I guess.
Yeah, what do you?
And he's like, yeah, man, it's he comes here every once in a while. It's I was like, Jason Witten comes here.
Yeah.
Like, why would Jason Witten come here? He's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
I said, what are you talking about? Jason Witten comes here every once in a while. He's like, dude, Jason Witten is the guy you just
went
to the bar with.
That's that Jason.
I was like, that's Jason Witten. I was like, I never put two and two together. I had no context.
Yeah.
Why would I think I'm sitting at a table with Jason Witten?
It's random.
So I'm like, that's Jason Witten? That's like me and Jason Witten just went to the bar together? The guy's like, yeah, he and Mike are close friends forever. So we ended up, it was such a long night that he had we both had flights back in Atlanta at like 9 a.m. And we were like 2 hours away from Atlanta at 4 a.m. We were in a bad spot.
Late night.
And so he was going to ride back with me to the Atlanta airport.
Oh,
that was the initial plan. He was going to ride back with
y'all
me.
Y'all got into it.
And he was like, okay, I'll ride with you to the Atlanta airport. We'll both catch our flights. And at the time, I was like, okay, let's do this then, because I had a rental car. He ended up like delaying his flight. He was smart. I wasn't. So I ended up going back to Atlanta by myself. But by all accounts, if he comes across on television like he's a good dude, like a fun dude, I can testify. He's a good dude and a fun dude.
Story number two.
Robert Kraft, Patriots owner, has pleaded not guilty to charges of soliciting prostitution. Which should not be surprising because rich white people always plead not guilty.
It's like a reflex response.
Yeah. Like if you are rich and white, just plead not guilty.
Right. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, but we have you on video stabbing a person in the neck.
Yeah, here it is.
I'm rich and white. We still going to try to beat this thing, all right? Not guilty. And so I was reading a lot about this case because they have him on video, you know.
Yeah, he's doing stuff.
Well, he's having stuff done to him.
Yeah.
You don't have to get too graphic, Brad. He's being pleasured by multiple women.
Fair enough.
At a massage parlor.
Yeah.
And then what the video shows, because this is all in the documents, is that he gives each of them a $100 bill. So you go, well, how are you going to plead not guilty to this?
Yeah.
You know, they got you on video being pleasured and then handing multiple women
$100
bills.
I think I like my word better than yours.
Okay. Okay, go ahead and say it.
Hando.
Hando? Is that a real?
The O takes a little emphasis off of it.
Has anybody ever called that a hando?
No, I just created that, but it's better than pleasuring. Like, pleasuring is so, like, he's pleasuring.
Like, hando, though? I never asked for a hando.
No, I haven't either. Just, I don't know. I'm trying to create words that take a little edge off the knife here.
So you would think that you'd be like, okay, how are you going to get away with this one, dude? You're on video getting what Cowboy Carson calls a hando.
Let's just name it that. I'm trying to take the edge off.
And then you're giving two women $100 bills. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? Here's going to be the argument.
What? It was the money consensual.
The money exchange didn't happen until afterwards. I didn't solicit prostitution. I didn't pay for them to do that.
Right.
I went to the room expecting to get a massage. It went down the way it went down. And then,
I got to pay for that other thing, too.
No,
yeah.
I don't have to pay for it because it wasn't prostitution. But I merely tipped them the way you would tip a pizza delivery person or a normal massage person.
Mm.
That would be the argument.
I think I don't know what Vegas odds are on him getting off.
Come on. That's what she said.
Come on. But I think he'll get off.
I think you can win that case.
Again.
If you're a rich white guy,
he's going to get off. They're going to get him off the hook for this charge.
I think they'll get him off the hook for this charge because he'll say,
yes.
You cannot say that I solicited prostitution when you don't have any video that has me handing them any money in advance.
Exactly.
I went into that room. I didn't know what was going to happen. It started going down the way it went down. I wasn't going to say no. And then I tipped them the way I would tip them.
Right.
They did what they did.
Yeah, they're just doing stuff.
I didn't pay for what they did. I tipped them after they did what they voluntarily did. And, of course, it's all BS, but it might be enough to get a not guilty verdict if he actually does end up in a trial of some sort.
Story number 3.
So Johnny Manziel has been cut by his CFL team and banned from that league in general, and now Darren Revelle is reporting that he's going to explore some Alliance of American Football opportunities. So this immediately gets people here fired up because if you wanted to actually turn the Memphis Express into something people might think about, talk about, even go see, having Johnny Manziel, former Heisman Trophy winner, big-time celebrity, as the quarterback of the franchise.
Oh, that'd do it.
That would that'd be like literally the best thing you could do.
Yes.
There's nothing you could do bigger than that. I really don't think there's anything you can do bigger than that.
No.
I was about to say maybe Colin Kaepernick, but like Colin Kaepernick just got $100 million from the NFL.
Right.
He ain't coming to play in the Alliance of American Football.
Right.
So, and he's already turned down opportunities to do so. So there really is nothing you could do bigger, I don't think, than Johnny Manziel quarterback in the Memphis franchise. The problem, of course, and I read this over at the commercial appeal, is that the way the Alliance of American Football is set up, they have an allocation system where each franchise gets, you know, has options on a certain number of schools within a certain region. And so given that Johnny Manziel played at Texas A&M, the San Antonio franchise would have a first pick at Johnny Manziel. If they wanted him, if he wanted to play and they wanted him, he'd have to play for San Antonio. So the odds of him ending up in Memphis are very, very slim, but the odds of him playing in the league that Memphis plays in, maybe not so slim.
Story number 4.
Bryce Harper agreed earlier today to the richest contract in American professional sports history. 13 years, $330 million. I saw this earlier. The richest guaranteed contract in NFL history? It's like $84 million.
Ugh.
The richest in baseball now? $330 million. And so the question becomes, like, what is Philadelphia doing here? 13 years, $330 million?
I don't know.
But here's the thing. If he was going to get basically 10 years, 300 from anybody. Like the Nationals offered that, even if a lot of it was deferred money. I feel like he could have got, if Manny Machado can get 10 years, 300, then Bryce could get 10 years, 300 from basically anybody who's willing to spend money on a player like that.
Yes.
So then what we're talking about is at age 37, 38, 39, you'd basically be signing him to a 3-year, $30 million contract, $10 million a year. Mm-hmm. And I would assume at that time, the money's not going to be nothing. And then secondly, like the National League will probably have a designated hitter spot by then. So he could be an old left-handed designated hitter if he can't move anymore. I just don't think it's that bad of a contract, even if I can acknowledge most of these contracts end up being bad. Like the only the one that probably wasn't bad was A-Rod's first big contract. Like he probably lived up to
the
that.
The first one, then that second one was a dud.
But well, he was suspended and all sorts of stuff. But the first one was like the $225 million.
Right.
He lived up to that mostly.
Yeah.
The Pujols contract's a disaster.
No.
The Machado contract might be not great someday. And this one could be too. But you know, if I'm the general manager of the Phillies, here's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I ain't even going to be here in 11 years. How many general managers last that long? If my owner's willing to sign off on this, what do I care?
Let's do it.
Let's try to win right now. Get the pop within our
That's
market.
True.
Get the pop within our market.
Yeah.
And, like, when the bill comes on this and I'm paying a 35-year-old Bryce Harper $25 million, who cares? I'm not even going to be here. Like, I'll probably be fired three times by three different franchises by then. What difference does it make? So anyway, I was hoping Bryce Harper would get moved out of the NL East for the purposes of the Mets. Did not happen. He goes from the Nationals to the Phillies, and he's a wealthy, wealthy man. Jeff Calkins up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.